Does it switch to the original German now? Wow, then it's still not worth our time. Stille Nacht or GTFO? That's what I always say. Happy Christmas. I heard a phrase the other day that's radio appropriate for like just like cussing basically and being frustrated. It's British slang, F's and Jeff's, effing and Jeffing. If you're just like muttering to yourself under your breath, I think that's a good one. I'm going to steal it. Yeah. What do you think, Dom?
I don't hate it.
Yeah, it's pretty good, right?
I like jog on as just on.
Yeah,
principle.
Jog on's good, but effing and Jeffing. I like that a lot. All right, we're back. One last segment. We're going to do the whiteboard, but first, I just want to tell you that Canucks Talk is brought to you by The Hockey Shop in Langley. Shop in store or online at thehockeyshop.com. Of course, you can get at us using the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And of course, we're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? All right, hit the drop. Let's do the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
Headlines. The Vancouver Canucks play their first game in franchise history during the regular season in Salt Lake City, Utah, against the as-yet-unnamed Utah Hockey Club. Now, first of all, Utah Hockey Club is the coolest name in the NHL. Every other team should go generic, and I'm very excited to see what they look like. Their jerseys are cool, the team plays fun hockey, and by the way, they're pretty good, okay? I think this is actually I wouldn't use the word scary, but a serious matchup for the Vancouver Canucks. Utah has outperformed Vancouver over the balance of the season at 5-on-5. They control play better than the Vancouver Canucks do. They defend better than the Vancouver Canucks do. And they have enough skill to hurt you. Now, that said, while what I'm talking about globally is true, the Canucks have a much higher ceiling. The Canucks have higher level star players. And when this Canucks team brings it, when they bring it and they come correct the way they did against the Colorado Avalanche and outcompete their opponent, they're pretty much impossible to score on. So I'm fascinated to watch this one, particularly because to me, Utah is the non-playoff team in the West that I think has the best shot of sneaking in and upsetting the sort of apple cart, as it were. We're looking at the Western Conference. We look at sort of both the Pacific and the Central, and we think we have a pretty good sense that Winnipeg, Minnesota, Vegas, LA, Dallas, Edmonton, Vancouver, and probably Colorado, once they figure it out and get past the Calgary Flames, are going to be the eight playoff teams in the West. I don't dispute that. I think that's the most probable outcome, too. If there's one team that can upset that mix, that can challenge that assumption, in fact, on the ice between now and the end of the season, to me, it feels like the unnamed Utah Hockey Club. Okay. And there's a variety of reasons for it. Number one, they're young and they're really skilled. There's a lot of very interesting players up and down this lineup. Dylan Gunther, who started the season hot, he's cooled down a little bit, but he's still very good and very dangerous. 29 points in 30 games for Gunther. Clayton Keller, 28 points. Logan Cooley, young Logan Cooley, okay? This guy is only 20. He's 20 years old, man. It's wild. 26 points. They've got a decent defense here. Michael Kesselring is a name to know. Big, brawny, right-handed shooter. Weirdly mobile. And if it makes you feel better, the Edmonton Oilers gave him away for a trade deadline rental a couple seasons ago. He'd be pretty much exactly what they need. So bullet dodged from a Canucks fan perspective, but not tonight. You've got Jack McBain, a Canucks killer. He's had some Canucks killing moments over the past few years with the Arizona Coyotes. He's like 6'7", just a truck of a human being, plays defense hard. And then they've got good depth. Like, they've got good, dangerous players up and down the lineup. Guys like Stenland and Hayton and Michelli who can hurt you. We'll get to see Ian Cole, ex-Canuck, tonight. We all know what Ian Cole brings, and we all know that it's pretty good. They're also getting pretty good goaltending from Connor Ingram and Vizhmelka. I'm not exactly sure who is starting today. The Canucks have to be on their game tonight. Okay. Utah, again, has a higher gear on the season so far than Vancouver has 5-on-5. Vancouver might have the ability to outpace them, but they haven't shown it consistently over 30 games. The overall body of work suggests that Utah may have an edge in terms of 5-on-5 play this evening. The Canucks are going to have to be sharp. The Canucks are going to have to win. You've got a second leg of a back-to-back game in Vegas. You do not want to be going in after a regulation loss to Vegas. That's a really tough spot, right? That's a really tough spot to be in, especially having dropped what I see outright as like a critical four-point game for the Canucks. Now, Vancouver's not so close to the playoff edge or anything that this is anything like a must-win or anything like that. So much would have to happen. So much would have to spiral outside their control for the Canucks to actually miss the playoffs. Like beating the Avs the other night mattered, right? Because it helps them avoid being at the point where these games really start to get to gut check territory. The Canucks aren't there, but they don't have a ton of margin, right? They haven't put teams like Calgary and Utah away yet. They probably will, but they haven't done it yet. And so beating those teams when you have the chance, right? Making sure you win when you face them, it's critical. It's absolutely essential, and it's just essential from the perspective of doing what the Canucks did down the stretch last season, for example, right? We saw this team safely ensconced in a playoff spot, still competing to seal the division, but take their feet off the gas a little bit. Not only did Miller and Hronek and Hughes and a couple others, Besser, rest for game 82 against Winnipeg on the road, but also, you know, from about game 65 onward, the Canucks started to really limit the minutes played by their top pair, right? And we sort of know and suspected then, but really had a better sense of it as the playoffs went along, that like that mattered. Like Filip Hronek wasn't 100%. Miller, Pettersson, Besser, same thing. Their minutes all ticked down significantly. This team was able to use their third line to get guys like Arshdeep Bains and Linus Karlsson some reps. You know, Vasily Podkolzin, just like get these guys some reps, get them comfortable, get them familiar. Make sure that you have options once you get into playoff series. And look, as much as it seemed like that might not matter, Linus Karlsson was the lineup change this team made ahead of a critical game three against the Oilers. Ahead of a critical game four against the Oilers. They won the next two, took a 3-2 lead in the series, right? Not that was all on Linus Karlsson, but it matters that you are able to spend some time breathing and looking long-term and resting your starter and resting some of your star players and trialing some guys that might make a difference if you're going on a 2.5-month playoff run. And if you're going to get there, if you're going to get there in game 65, if you're going to avoid sweating it out down the stretch, these are the sorts of games you got to win. So I'm fascinated to watch this game tonight. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's not only going to be a lot of fun, I think it's going to be relatively high stakes. Probably, you know, other than like this Colorado game, this game, this Vegas game, this is a treat. This is like a trio of games that actually matter before Christmas. I know I'm going to enjoy it. I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Let's move on to the broadsheet. Frank Saravalli of the Daily Faceoff, also a Sportsnet 650 contributor, is hinting that the Canucks may be closing in on a trade to bolster their defense. He joined the Halford and Brough show and, to paraphrase it, effectively noted that the Canucks are working on a trade and a more substantial trade than just dealing Vincent Desharnais. It's about getting a top four defenseman, and talks have picked up on that front, although there's no guarantee that it will be done by the Thursday night trade freeze. Saravalli later mentioned on his own program that the club is making progress, outright making progress, in terms of landing a defensive upgrade and an efficient puck mover. Okay, the quote is, "I'm told the Canucks feel like they've made some progress on their search for an impact D-man and efficient puck mover. There seems to be a heightened sense of urgency in the past 24 to 48 hours, certainly on alert with the Canucks." Now, it's going to be hard to pull off a deal by the trade deadline. My understanding is that the flu bug has really gone around the organization, right? So I'm not sure that all key decision makers are 100% at the moment or even in the office. So these are sorts of complications. And look, if you're swinging a big deal in the next 48 hours, because that's really what you have to execute a trade before Christmas here, I mean, it's tough. There's not a lot of time. These are complex trades to execute, but Saravalli, pretty good track record reporting on this team, often gets stuff well before the pack. He, again, was careful to caption that he's not guaranteeing that a trade will go through prior to the deadline, but something to watch for, something to monitor, something to be aware of over the course of this week. We certainly know the Canucks are busy. We know that the Canucks want a defender. Rick Dhaliwal and Pierre LeBrun suggesting they also want a winger. That makes sense to me. I still also expect them to get a right-handed faceoff winner at some point between now and then. And as I've been reporting for a while, like term, ideally, right? Like term is going to be, I think, critical here. If the club is parting with additional assets, more futures, especially after parting with so many for rental type players who they didn't re-sign last season, I think they're looking for long-term fits, especially given that dynamic that exists internally where this club feels like they're quote unquote caught in between on the back end, right? That they like what they have coming, but they kind of got to build a bridge to it. And if they're going to build a bridge to it, they want long-term fits. Are they approaching landing one of those long-term fits? I guess we'll see. Fascinating stuff at the moment. Lineup notes. Not a lot of reporters have followed the team to Utah, but Sportsnet Murph, our friend Dan Murphy, has. And Murphy, or Dan, or Murph, as you prefer, reports that it looked like Demko was doing the starter's routine at a well-attended Vancouver optional skate in Salt Lake City today. So Demko looks poised to perhaps make his third consecutive start. Back-to-back set. So the club, quite understandably, may prefer Lankanen going against Vegas, given that Lankanen's the fresher, sort of sharper goalie. I guess he's not fresher anymore, given that we know that he's been sick over the course of the last 4 days, but certainly has had more ramp-up time over the course of a normal season versus Demko, who's spent months sort of rehabbing and getting to the point of returning. Three straight starts is certainly something we'd furrow our eyebrow about, I think, given the sort of workload that Demko appears to be hitting right off the bat. I think it's mostly a good sign that Demko has been able to come back and just resume normal activity. But I do think the club should probably be careful about ramping him up. I don't know exactly what that looks like because I've never seen a goaltender come back from a popliteus tear. Like, I have no idea what's going on from that or sort of what it looks like when a team manages it successfully versus not. It's unprecedented. So I don't have a frame of reference to know or opine on whether or not he's being overworked or not or what have you. But you'd hope that the club would be careful with that. Back-to-back set, I suspect that this is more just about let's buy our sick goalie an extra day. Or, hey, we had to play Demko against the Avalanche because this guy got sick, but let's stick with our plan aside from that. We're not going to flip Demko to play against Vegas and Lankanen to come back against Utah simply because Lankanen couldn't go on Monday against the Avalanche. Let's just stick with our plan, which we had to deviate from because of an illness to a player. So both of those explanations would make sense to me. I'm not going to make a mountain out of a molehill to this of this yet. But, you know, I don't know. Do we really think Lankanen would have sort of lost starts in perpetuity or that the Canucks would be rushing to load up a workhorse type load on Demko right off the bat simply because Lankanen got sick for a weekend? That doesn't really track. So we'll let this play out before we sort of pick at it, backseat drive, criticize. Is notable, though, Demko having returned to action just 8 days ago, making his third consecutive start for the Canucks. In other lineup news, the Canucks announced on Tuesday that they'd reassign Mark Friedman, who had a really strong game against the Florida Panthers, faded a bit on Saturday against the Bruins, struggled in that game, a poorly timed pinch on the 3-0 goal that sort of salted the game away. And Artur Shelovs, who we know has you know, fallen down the depth chart. He started for the Canucks on opening night. He was their playoff starter in the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs, and he struggled massively at the NHL level. He was back up on an emergency basis because Lankanen got sick. Lankanen obviously able to go on the trip. That terminates the emergency conditions of She Loves His Loan, so he was reassigned to Abbotsford. Linus Karlsson and Phil DiGiuseppe were recalled from Abbotsford and have joined the club on this back-to-back set. We know that both Karlsson and DiGiuseppe are Tocchet favorites, right? For very different reasons. DiGiuseppe, in your mind's eye, plays exactly the way that Tocchet wingers, or Tocchet wants his wingers to play. Fast, back checks hard, honest effort every night. A little bit of offensive pop, honestly. I mean, you know, you probably don't want to see him on a line with Miller and Besser long-term, but certainly on a fourth line, we've seen that he's able to consistently contribute and do damage. And man, Phil DiGiuseppe, like, he set a career high for games played last season. Okay. He stuck with the Canucks from nose to tail throughout the entire campaign, appeared in 51 games. That's more than he'd ever appeared in at the NHL level over the course of an entire season. 5 goals, 5 assists, 10 points, came in clutch with that new dad strength in the playoffs. I mean, you could not ask for more from a player like Phil DiGiuseppe. And then the Canucks go out this summer and just bring in like 4 bodies on the wings. And DiGiuseppe has had to wait until right before Christmas to get another NHL shot. It's tough life, man. Like, the life cycle for the quad A type, and in my opinion, Phil DiGiuseppe's more than that. In my opinion, he's a genuine NHL fourth line winger. But the life cycle for that player type is brutal. I'd expect we get a very motivated DiGiuseppe if he gets back in the lineup. As for Karlsson, you know, we all know what Karlsson can do. We know that he's strong on his stick. We know that the foot speed is something of an issue, something that's held him back. He's certainly worked to address that issue in his game. He's been hurt on and off. He's only played 7 games for Abbotsford this season, but obviously his near point per game, 5 goals in across those 7 games. Look, he brings some size, he brings some skill, and he certainly brings some battle winning along the wall. Let's get to the playoff forecast. Now, the Canucks are 91% likely to make the playoffs, according to Dom Lecision's model over at The Athletic, but this is the number I want to highlight, okay? The Canucks entered the season projected for 106 points by the model, and because of their form to this point, right, the model has begun to soften its stance on this team. And it's not because of the way they're pacing in the standings. It's because of how their underlying 5-on-5 play has trended, which is maybe troubling is too strong a word, but it's not in a favorable direction, especially since, let's say, November 14th, something in and around there. So for the last month, this team's been outshot very consistently, outchanced very consistently, outscored, in fact, 5-on-5. So this team's form is trending in a way where the model's confidence is waning on their ability to, for example, win the Pacific Division. Their point projection as a result has dropped from 106 to 102. Meanwhile, their Stanley Cup odds, okay, so their odds of actually winning it all. Now, these are interesting odds because the model, for example, knows that Filip Hronek's going to miss some time, but wouldn't factor that in. Like, the model will factor Hronek's absence, for example, into their point projection, but not into their Stanley Cup final projection or Stanley Cup winning odds, because the model expects them to get Hronek back, right? The model expects them to have him for the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. The Canucks opened the season with 9% Stanley Cup championship odds, according to Dom Lecision's model. They're currently at 5%. So in some ways, the model, they're standing in the model, which, you know, look, it's one tool, okay? Take it with a grain of salt. But I think it matches what we've seen too, right? Across 30 games, we came into the season thinking, okay, you know, is this Canucks team a contender? The parallel paths, right, that we've spent so much time obsessing over. We feel safely that the Canucks are a playoff team. We still do. Confident that they're a playoff team. But the underlying question of this season, even if we've been sidetracked occasionally from it because of all the intrigue and absences and injuries and raw luck and just how, you know, impurely this team has run over the course of the season, we've looked at, you know, we've sort of been distracted from it. But the underlying question, can this team win a Stanley Cup, I think is one where the model softened. Have we softened? I think a little bit, right? Like, I think we're waiting to see this Canucks team look like a contender. I think we all have a sense that maybe there's some sleeping giant potential in terms of what this group is. I think we all understood that this stretch of season was going to be a hold the fort type stretch. And yet, you know, with the way that this team is played the right way only sometimes, with the way that they've been outshot, with the way that we've watched too many periods, whether the Canucks win the game at the end of it or not, where like the Columbus Blue Jackets look too quick for them, right? I think with all of that, I think we've softened a little bit too. Like, there's a reason we don't keep talking about the are the Canucks a contender question, right? It feels like we've gotten into a humdrum portion of the season where the questions have become a little more day-to-day, a little more pertinent. Like, the big picture is sort of waned in importance. And I think that their softening vis-a-vis the model sort of just, for me anyway, captured that as something of a snapshot. So I wanted to highlight it because I thought it was interesting. 5% playoff odds, still pretty good, right? There's not a lot of teams in the league that have 5% playoff odds. Every team would love to be considered so highly, and they're not. But, you know, it's not where the model had the Canucks entering the season. And I think there is some interesting information for us to gather from that. As for tonight's game, the Canucks are actually road dogs, okay? We know that the betting markets are very high on the Utah Hockey Club. We talked about their playoff odds being plus 150 on yesterday's show. That's reflected here. Utah favored tonight against the Canucks, minus 120. The Canucks plus 100 on the money line. Over-under is set at 5.5. There is far more steam on the over. In fact, you can get plus 105 for the under 5.5 goals tonight for tonight's game in Salt Lake City. That's going to do it for the whiteboard. It's going to be a really interesting night. Canucks road dogs in their first ever game in Salt Lake City. I wouldn't have assumed that. That's something of a surprise to me. And man, I think this one matters. I if the Canucks want to just sort of snuff out a potential threat to their playoff odds before the ball really gets rolling, right? Because that's what we're talking about when we talk about Utah's potential. We're talking about a team with a lot of young talent that seems to be playing the right way. A team that, by the way, was very much in the Western Conference playoff mix last season until they lost something like 18 of 19 after the relocation rumors surfaced, right? So undone last season by the instability of the Arizona Coyotes laundromat, sorry, NHL franchise, right? This group of players has come in to a new environment, a healthy organization, stable ownership, an excited market, and they've been playing well. Now, if they're going to make the playoffs, if they're going to crash the party, if they're going to be a meaningful threat to a team like the Canucks, then they're very much at the top of the hill with the Boulder only beginning to gather momentum here. And for them to actually be a threat, what's it going to take? It's going to take them winning a lot of games, going on a run here. It's going to take new ownership, dynamic ownership down in Utah, taking a big swing and upgrading massively at the trade deadline. And then it's going to include them sustaining, you know, a run down the stretch run, right? This Canucks team is not going to be easy to beat for a team like Utah, not just tonight, but over the course of 82 games. Right? As vulnerable as this Canucks team has seemed at times over the first 30, we know the skill level that they have. But the ball could keep rolling tonight, right? Or the Canucks could catch it, arrest some of that momentum, keep themselves safely above the fray, safely above any threat posed by the playoff line or an upstart unnamed group like the Utah Hockey Club. All right, that's going to do it for today's show. I'm Thomas Drance. You've been listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.